Blog Talk Radio.
Sorry, that wasn't working. Like tempered tempered steel, glowing red in a bed of coals, the poet is born. Our story is riddled with challenges and changes like blows from a blacksmith's hammer. Bent and chiseled in shape, if only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationships, experiences, environment, and genetics all take a hand in molding the poets that we are. Welcome to Double Helix, where your true colors are what ties the room together. Get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of. I'm Afaziana, and I have our other host, Dexter Bailey, the Duke of St. Paul. I hope you are here. Dex, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here lurking. You know, that's kind of what I do best. I kind of lurk in the shadows. Well, that's how you make an entrance, you know. I like to keep people on their toes. They don't quite know if I'm in the place or not, you know. And then all of a sudden I swoop in and I'm on stage and here we go. But, yeah, I'm here as usual, Duke of St. Paul, a.k.a. Duke Skywalker, Dex Arcana. But, yeah, I'm excited for tonight. Got a great night of poetry. Poetry prompt lurkers, right, Robbie? That's right. That's what we need to come out. But that might be for one for Pam's show. That's kind of a dark subject. I don't know if people would be that on board with writing a personal prompt about lurking in the shadows. Unless we draw out all the serial killers on AP, we'll see who's out there. No, I'm just kidding. But hopefully everybody's having a good night. And we got another great night of poetry here ahead of us. This week's prompt is on the art of exaggerating. You know, everybody kind of exaggerates, and it kind of just is what something that adds flavor to a story. You know, it adds a little bit of pizzazz. You know what I mean? Sometimes when you just kind of tell the absolute truth of everything, it can kind of be a little bit dull. So that was the idea behind it. Who out there has a little bit of pizzazz to their writing and to their poetry that can add that little bit of flavor? So we're excited about the rights that we have here tonight. Faziana, do we have a next contest lined up or not quite yet? We still working on it?
I'm still working on it, but it'll be out very soon. It's been a bit crazy, and we missed you last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We did, and I'm like, well, as usual, I'm always here. I said, I forgot I was
even
on the
last show. I was like, oh, really?
Well, I'm usually here, I guess, or whatever, from the previous, you know, whatever episodes. But that's right. I forgot we missed last. I missed last episode. But anyway, I'm here to put
that
past
callers.
Who?
We definitely have Pam, and then we have one more where I'm not sure.
Well, Pam's for sure a lurker too. There was Pam. Where are you?
Welcome, Pam. And welcome,
hey,
Mystery Pam.
Hey, Dexter. Good to
Hello.
Hear you.
Hey, Pam.
You too. Who is our mystery caller?
That's Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How did you ever know? Must be lurking outside my house and peering through my windows.
Oh, that Dex does that sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
You see me sitting here half naked in front of my computer, you know. It's got Tom working out.
Well, there's no need to lurk when
sun.
You give us details like that.
Well, see, that's the only way to keep you away from the windows.
But anyway, so glad to, everybody's here. The gang's all here. The party started. It's off to a strange night. So with that being said, Faziana, why don't you take us to where we start?
All right. Well, Pam is here, so I'm going to put hers up first. There we go. Pam, get us started.
All right. I haven't had the time or the focus to do new writes lately, so this is a
that's
a
all right.
Pre-write. So this is The Fish on the Shore of a Small Lake, and it goes like this. I remember from my youth the time I caught a largemouth bass. It was not caught with the aid of casted line, the swollen, warm, writhing temptation on a barbed hook, the courteous nod of the bobber and the jagged jewels of summer water. No, I simply walked, as I had countless other times, on the cool, damp shore of Scoville Lake, barefoot, so that the mud, the grass, and the microscopic organisms squished and pooled between the grasp of toads, searching among the reeds for the frogs, green-spotted, and the bullfrog with its deep, resonating belch. There it lay, that fish, plump and wet, silvery displays of muted green and gold, breathing not in a frenzied desperation to survive the pink flesh of its gills and the round mouth in slow and quiet, an acceptance of death, a final farewell to the mediocrity of life as a fish. My legs skipped and jumped like giddy windmills, eager to show the treasure delivered by the gentle lapping of waves. I watched my grandfather prepare the fish, the scraping away of scales on a spoon's edge, confident and efficient cuts removing entrails and bone. And truly, what child could find humility in such a day, every fillet of tender, glistening pearl meat laid out, such high praise was offered. Oh, how delicious it tasted, fried by my grandmother, dripping in an abundance of oil, slathered in the sultry tang of freshly made tartar sauce. Over the years, more fish were caught and eaten, but my grandfather continued to tell the story of me finding the bass on the shore of our small lake, and with jovial exaggeration, the size of the aquatic beast was demonstrated by the spread of Grandfather's hands that seemed to grow farther and farther apart with each retelling of the tale and poem.
Fantastic read, Pam. Great piece. Tom, why don't you start us with comments on this?
It's a great fish tale because it should always grow bigger with every retelling. You catch sort of the great adventure and wonder of youth and the description of getting to the lake and to the fish was just beautiful. I loved the silver displays of muted green and gold, breathing not in a frenzied desperation to survive. That was just really, really sharp. In the earlier verse, the searching among the reeds for frogs, green spotted in the bullfrog with his deep resounding belch. I can remember doing things like that. This is just a great story from start to finish with the imagery really rich and thick, especially the description of cooking it in lots of oil. That's exactly right. I could get hungry reading that again.
Thank you. Yeah, first and only time I ever caught a fish by just having it be right there at the...
That was your moment?
On the shoreline. Yeah.
Great comment, Tom, and you kind of nailed it there. So let's go, Faziano, what did you think about this write?
I loved it. I like the way that the fishing is described at the beginning, the courteous nod of the bobber. That's not how you caught it that time, but just the idea of the bobbers nodding, being courteous. It's such a fun way of saying that. And then you use alliteration with jagged jewels. I really loved squished and pooled between the grasp of toes. There's something about bare feet in that soil, that's the mud that's wet under the water or next to the water. And the way that you said grasp, it makes me picture the toes really like digging into the sand. And how there is those microscopic organisms there. I recently spent a bunch of time with my little nephew, and he's very sensitive about all the small creatures. So I sat down on this one log, and he said, "There are creatures there." And he was very concerned that I might push like an ant or something. he was just horrified. Like, did you look to see if there were creatures?
Oh, my goodness.
It's like, Auntie, the creatures live on trees. So I just thought of that when you said the microorganisms between the toes. I just imagine my poor little nephew just having a fit that you might be smushing something.
Right.
Maybe he will be. I don't know. He's very particular, although he did ask me to kill a hornet at one point. And I did. I squashed it onto his hot dog where it was attacking.
What?
And he was mad.
What
at me
a
for that.
Hero.
We all have failings. There we go.
Oh,
gosh. Too funny.
I just love the details that you put in here, Pam. And the fact that it's not just that you caught it. You caught it in such an unusual way, you know, just finding it laying there. Now, around here, you can get salmon like that, but it's not pretty. You don't want the salmon once it happens. In the fall, we just have piles and piles of salmon, and it stinks. It's not. They're no longer
exactly
in condition that you want them.
Well, yeah, and
so
this, well,
good that you got it before.
Because I've seen dead fish on shore lakes before, but most of the time they're already ticked over. They're that kind of dead where you definitely wouldn't eat them. This one just happened to still, you know, be fresh. So, yeah, I know what you're talking about, how, like, you know, they're on the shore of the lake and they look like, you know, other animals have already started to get to them or just look rotten.
Yeah.
I think it's nice that you included your grandparents here. Having your grandfather help with cutting out the bones and your grandmother cooking it, there's this sense of family. And I think a lot of people associate fishing and nature and food with their grandparents or their family. So this really just creates this wonderful sense of childhood and nostalgia, and I think that you went full circle with that, and it's beautiful.
Thank you.
Great comment, Afasiana. Don't let your nephew ever turn on the news, then, that's for sure. He'll see a lot more worse than that. So, but what we have here, though, is just an incredible rite. You know, I enjoyed it, and it's a nostalgic rite for, and I, you know, it brings back memories of being at the lake with my grandfather and my grandmother. You know, but I loved the description that was laid out throughout this too. You know, plump and wet, silvery displays of muted greens and golds, breathing, not in a frenzied desperation to survive. So it was a great tale, but it was just riddled with just great, great detail within there that definitely just brought you to that place. And, you know, and it's like, you know, these things that, you know, there's never a lot of the other stuff that people remember. And I think that that's what's great about this, is that it triggers everybody's mind, because it's kind of the same things when you're a kid that you kind of remember, it seems like, you know, the things that stand out. And so this is something that definitely stood out. And I think maybe in a lot of other people's minds too, as well. You got quite a bit of likes on this one too. And, but I just think that this was a great write, Pam. And, thank you for sharing it this evening.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. And it looks like we got Tom up next. Whenever you're ready, Tom, give that a read for us.
Okay. Harley against the sand. I traced her name in the rain beads, now dust smoke and memories on glass, letting my fingers linger on her valves and cheeks as I saw her in my ache clenched against my chest. Yearn for more paint, the canvas as a description, blue jeans, hopes, star-licked nights, city's neon creaks against dawn's knuckled sheets. She stands, arms akimbo, defiant. The final of an argument built on righteous misunderstanding, the token of our fall from forever, the eternal need we had to prove who was right by driving into the wall of always wrong. Slam doors, tear glimpsed and denied, our egos caromed against each other, marbles knocked out of the ring. We played keepers in pain until the last damn day. Peaches disappear in storms, stains remain after the body is torn. Motorcycles demand a steady hand, speed and corners to dare. We met, spent in a splurge of passion, night, love, devotion, and kept demanding more until we were ghosts in each other's arms. Anger, a kickstart, a tear that blurred a corner's arc. There were no vultures to eat pavement's plate. Tulips, blossoms from a bulb so dark. No logos, no profit, nothing but a scar to brand the heart. She found my signature of her name before the rain, washed it away before they lowered me into the grave. Ours was not a love unrequited. We met, we kissed, we didn't know enough yet to accept what was provided.
And great read, Tom. And thank you for calling in and sharing this with us. Pam, why don't we start with you on comments?
Absolutely. Oh my goodness, this is such a strong emotive write with a great use of imagery. I really like yearn for more paint, the canvas as a description, blue jean hopes, starlit nights, cities, neon creeps against dawn's knuckled sheet. She stands, arms akimbo. I really like that use of the word akimbo. I like how you bring in the sounds and the imagery that puts the emotion into it. Slam doors, tears glimpsed and denied, our egos caromed against each other, marbles knocked out of the ring. this whole moment in life where there's somebody that you share a passion with and a love with, but at the same time, you know, things just don't work out because your egos are butting heads. And I like how you wrap it up with the idea of that, you know, that the love wasn't unrequited. It was, you both had it there. But you just, like you said, but didn't know enough yet to accept what was provided. And that is so true. Oftentimes in youth, we think things that are love aren't, and things that aren't love are. And, you know, just absolutely a brilliant write all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Faziano, what did you think about this one?
Well, before I comment, I want to acknowledge that we have a new caller. And they're just loading in now.
Awesome.
Welcome, new caller. May I ask who's calling?
Oh, peace and blessings. My name is Romeo D. Nancy.
Hello. Welcome.
Oh, awesome.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. Were you able to hear that last piece that we wrote? That was read?
No. I just was able to call back in.
Oh, awesome. Not a problem. Why don't we go to you, Faziana?
Sure. So I really liked this, Thomas. I like that you talk about tracing her name, and then you describe it as your fingers linger on her vowels. And I think of vowels tend to be rounded. There's a curve to vowels. So your fingers lingering on her vowels makes me think that they also lingered on her curves. And you were thinking of her as you wrote that. So I liked the way that you did that. It was subtle, but kind of sensual at the same time. I liked the word akimbo, just like Pam was saying, it's a good way to describe how she was standing. And I liked the way that you described the arguing. Egos caromed against each other. There was another part like that where I've lost the part. But you have, like, really strong ways of describing how it's this internal battle, in addition to the ways that it shows with the slam doors and the tears. And I like that the tears are glimpsed and denied. You know, they're there, but they're, no, I'm not crying, you're crying. there's so much feeling in this. And I like that you say it's a splurge of passion. But then at the end, like Pam pointed out, you're saying it's not really quite an unrequited love. You know, you weren't there yet. I think this is really a great poem of capturing that spark and that kind of fiery moment of, you know, maybe the passion was strong and the fighting was strong, but it's a memorable time. I think you described it really well.
Sorry, you got a dog going off. Faziano, you want to take this?
I'll adopt the dog, sure. Which one is it? Is it Dexter or Bailey? Okay, he's gone. all right. So Pam commented, and it's Tom's poem. So I guess we're going to move on to the next one, which is by Martha Gettle. And I will read that one. Okay. My Morning Walk by Martha Gettle. Out for a walk one morning as the sun was dawning, had woods out the back door. In those woods I love to explore. Took off to the woods by myself, just me, didn't need anyone else. The day was bright and clear. My heart sang just to be here. Then, oh my, what do I see? A spider web in front of me. I looked closer, couldn't believe. Hummingbirds stuck tight as you please. took my scissors, I cut it free, free from the web, quick as can be. It stayed with me till I got to my door. I said, will I see you anymore? I swear it gave me a tip of its wing, as if it was saying, sure thing. As I flew away, I had to smile. As it flew away, I had to smile. I hadn't felt this good in quite a while. I know you think it's a lie, you do. But I swear, every word of it's true. End poem. Tom, would you like to comment?
That's just so delightful. Just reminds me of my hummingbirds and the feeders I have. And the fact that when they start, when the one in front gets low, if I'm sitting on the porch, the hummingbird has more on one occasion sat right in front of my face, buzzing at me and chirping before it flies over the feeder and then flies away. I think it knows that I'm the one that fills it. So much of this sounds very real to me. I love Martha. I love the way she tells the story in her tight little couplets. Catching so much detail in each one and building and putting it together like a puzzle so that by the time she's done, you have a complete picture and a full sense of everything that happened. I just always enjoy the way she tells.
Great comment. Yes, there's such a whimsy to this, right? It has like a light kind of, I can picture her kind of skipping across the place, looking at it, and like being like the little shocked face of like, oh no, a hummingbird, and then cutting it free and setting it free, and it's like a Disney moment of the hummingbird responding with the little tip of the wing, like sure thing. I thought that was such a cute little detail, and with our theme being exaggeration, I think that's perfect because maybe there was a bird that was stuck, and maybe she set it free, but she wrote it in such a way that it's like a magical, like Disney princess moment of now this bird is going to be her companion. I think that's so sweet. It had a kind of gentle flow to the whole thing that I really liked. Romeo, would you like to comment?
Romeo, where art thou? Mute, unmute.
Oh, we lost Romeo. He has dropped. Okay, Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this is whimsical. It's delightful and lovely. I really enjoy the rhyming couplets. I like how it does definitely come across as a true story, but has a little slight exaggeration, like I swear it gave me a tip of its wing as if it was saying sure thing. And knowing hummingbirds, it was saying sure thing as long as you have food to give me. Otherwise, I'm moving on to the next Disney princess because, you know, that's the way hummingbirds are. And, you know, I really just like how she tells this entire story with the couplets. And how she doesn't just give the imagery, but also the emotion of how she felt. As it flew away, I had to smile. I hadn't felt this good in quite a while. That's just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done.
I agree. And now I really want to have, like, a cartoon that is this sassy little hummingbird who's demanding things.
I think, they do,
Pam, you're hired as voice actor. Tom, did you say that
the
exists?
The one in the front yard sits and guards the feeder like it belongs to him and only him. And I've had the same family come back for 3 or 4 years, so, you know.
That's awesome. I love hummingbirds. I found that, like, hummingbird feeders unfortunately seem to, like, attract, like, the wasps and hornets and, like, all the things that that also like the sweet water.
Well,
I've had bad luck.
You have to get the right kind, and you have to do things to protect it. There are things you can do.
All right. Well, I'll have to learn the
truth. There's a way around everything.
This is true. I'm not used to having a yard, and I still only have a tiny yard. But. you know.
Yeah, that's an adventure.
It's the thing about renting. All right, Pam, would you please do us the honor of reading the poem by Teodora Anderson?
I would be happy to. And this is My Life Has Been an Exaggeration by Teodora Anderson. And it goes like this. My life has been an exaggeration, a big giant red letter exclamation, and a never-ending flying in the sky proclamation, a wait and see what tomorrow brings devastation. It has been a life of deviation, but I am always short on inspiration. My words have become my only way of transformation that falls short on interpretation. But I am full of gratification for any and all contemplation. So please encourage my lame attempt in orchestration as I break out in highs to the word exaggeration. End quote.
Excellent read, and that was a very fun write, Teodora. I like that line. Break out in hives to the word exaggeration. That's an extreme reaction. And from the very beginning, a big giant red letter exclamation. The fact that there's exclamation points all over this really works well with the exaggeration. And the devastation, proclamation, actually using the rhymes that have the shun at the end is perfect because those tend to be kind of dramatic words, proclamation, deviation, inspiration, transformation, you know, anything that ends in the shun seems to be kind of a powerful thing, and then it goes with the exaggeration. So I think that was a really smart choice to go with those rhymes and to pick those words. This is really fun. And my words have become my only way of transformation that falls short on interpretation. And I feel like a lot of writers can connect with that. You know, sometimes our words are how we, transform ourselves. This is how we become the version of ourselves that we want to be, or that we don't know how to express in other ways, maybe. And then it can be interpreted in many ways. This is the thing about poetry and writing. It's you put yourself out there to be interpreted in many ways. So despite the fact that this is very silly, I also think it has quite a bit of depth to it. It's fun, but it also makes you think. Pam, you read it for us. Do you also want to comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, this has great humor to it. I really enjoyed that. And how she did the, like you said, though, the words that, you know, just they're words that have a lot of oomph to them. And I did like how she also used the exclamation points. My words have become my only way of transformation that falls short on interpretation. I thought that had some nice humor to it, but it also made a serious point in the whole idea that sometimes we write things down, you know, and write poems down right for ourselves, and the metaphors and the imagery we use sometimes gets lost on other people. I think that's just a really nice reminder that to write your poetry for yourself, for your own growth, your own healing. And I did like the exaggeration of breaking out in highs to the word exaggeration. That was really cool. So just a great write and very well done.
It was. Tom, what did you think?
Oh, I don't, no. It starts off with this declaration of how her life has been an exaggeration, bigger than the truth, bigger than life. And yet, tomorrow brings devastation. So there's lots of great highs, but there's also lots of great lows. She's never, you know, it has been a life of deviation. Sounds like a lot of the people I grew up with, where we were all running around becoming masters of conforming to nonconformity and being different and trying to be inspired and crazy and funny and great. And so it's so fitting, as we've already mentioned, about her words become her way of transformation, but that are not always understood. And yet, she is full of thankfulness, gratification for any and all contemplations. So please encourage my lame attempts and orchestrations, trying to bring all this together, trying to make it all work. For this, the symphony of music comes from so many different members participating with a sense of oneness. So it's no great surprise that she breaks out in hives to the word exaggeration. The whimsy and madness is tremendous, but it catches the life of somebody who's taken on the adventure of being artistic, regardless of what others might think that means.
Yes, I think that's a great way to put it. And I think we're going to see a lot of whimsy in the rites tonight, because exaggeration brings that out in us, and I love that. I tend to be known for a little bit of exaggeration, but for me, it's like, I think it's because I have really big feelings about everything, whether good or bad, and it doesn't feel like exaggeration in my mind. Like, that's how I experience it. For other people, it might not be something. Oh, yay, Dexter is back. Dex, would you like to comment on the poems that you missed?
Well, I'd like to comment on the Theodora one. I'm going to have to leave a written. I'll leave a written one on the other one, but I just like how the this was kind of a different style for Theodora. She kind of came at this with a little bit of just a comedic edge to it. But as the world breaks out in hives to the world exaggeration, there definitely was a lot of poetry to the way that she did go with it, and it was a great rhyme and flow. So I thought it was a great write for Theodora, and I always appreciate somebody that kind of takes a little bit of a shot at a different style. So well done by her.
Yes, I agree. It was very well done. And she has quite a variety in her style. I really enjoy her writing.
As do I, so... Very well done. And where are we heading to next, Faziana?
Will you please read the one by Chuck 17?
Absolutely. This is Billy the Arrow by Chuck 17. My grandfather's house was a holiday gathering, places for our families. 20 cousins would gather around Grandpa's chair and listen to stories he would tell. One particular Christmas Eve, he began to tell us a tale that none of us could ever imagine. My grandfather was born in 1867, truth, and died in 1972. He was 105 years old. The story goes as follows. He and his best friends, when they were 1885, took a train from Erie, Pennsylvania to St. Louis, and then bought 2 horse tickets and rode to Texas to fight Indians. I know that sounds incredible, but he had pictures to prove the story in an old photo album. His friend was actually shot with an arrow, and it grazed his left eye and blinded that eye permanently. His friend had a few nicknames after they returned, but one that really stuck was Billy the Arrow. They were in Texas for about a month before Billy got injured, and they returned to Erie. Not much I can add to the story. All true. End poem. And, with that being said, why don't we start with you with comments, Tom?
Well, I love stories like this because you really think about this. This is an incredibly young country in the grand scheme of things. And so much of our history was just yesterday or the day before that. And there are still so many people wandering around who have tales they related to their kids, and their kids are telling it, are telling us now. It's just simply amazing when you stop to think about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that I enjoyed about this, this rite was, just the history behind it. You know, the, they took an adventure, and, you know, so many times, so many kids at 18 go on maybe a road trip in a car, you know, maybe, I mean, I remember being 12, 13 and going across town on bikes and stuff. In 1885, obviously it was a different story, and they took a way different type of road trip when you're going in 1885 across the country and fighting Indians, and maybe just for the hell of it, it sounds like, just to take, just to go on an adventure. So this is quite the story by his grandfather, and just talk, it just obviously shows a different time, you know, in our country. So I thought that this was very well done. And Faziana, what did you think about this one?
Oh, like, I'm a little bit disturbed that it's in such recent history that people were, like, off to fight the Indians. That part's a little bit awful for me. But the rest of it, the poem itself, is really nice. I liked that it has that family sense of, like, everybody gathering around the grandpa and listening to the stories. I have a really big family, too, in terms of cousins. So having the 20 cousins there feels really special. I mean, it's rare, I think, that that happens where everyone can gather like that. I know everyone's all spread out now in my family. But there was this sense of, like, closeness at holiday gatherings where you could all hear the tale, and then every one of them probably tells it a little bit differently, and all of those grandkids are passing on this story, and maybe it gets exaggerated in different ways and different levels as each of them passes it on. So I really like that multi-generational feel of this.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you pointed out, too, that, I mean, obviously it is a little bit you know, westernized, you know, to kind of, how do you want to say this, kind of idolize that style of thing. I guess I was just kind of admiring the adventureness of it. But, yeah, there definitely is a dark side to this, right? There's a dark side to this entire history of this country. Definitely on the other side, there's plenty of stories of this, too, even, you know, at a young age, too, that a lot of the Native Americans had to step up when they were 14, 13, all of which, like I said before, is just such a different time in our country that people had to grow up so fast at that, in that era. Pam, what did you think about this, right?
Yeah, I like how he starts it out with, my grandfather's house was a holiday gathering place for all. That's when I was a kid, we used to have some really big family gatherings for holidays of, like, you know, 25 or more people. That's a good long life his grandfather lived. You don't get to see that too often. So that's, you know, a lot of history there. And I think you made a good point there, Dexter, about how the, you know, the story probably gets retold, and, you know, and each time it gets retold, it gets exaggerated a little more. Just really a wonderful rite, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And did I get everybody? You said that Romeo dropped?
Mm-hmm.
Romeo, where art thou? So, yeah, so he dropped. Did I get to everybody, though, on this one? For comments, awesome. Looks like Daniel's kind of joined us in the chat. Hopefully he can give us a call here in a little bit. I know he's got a piece, but if not, we can get his read no matter what. But where are we heading to next, Faziana?
I'm going to get Tom to read the one by Gerald E. Green, and I will watch the board in case Daniel does call in, and we'll get him to do his own if he does, and if not, then in a couple reads we'll do it.
Okay, this is Story by Gerald E. Green. I love to hear stories from Grandpa, especially the one with the bear claw. It was a fierce fight in a brilliant moonlight, a battle of knife versus paw. But when we went fishing together, his fables got better and better. When just a young man, he crossed Hindustan wearing old jeans and a sweater. He fought in the war under Patton, got medals for making an end run. He captured a corps and shortened the war, only a tank and a machine gun. Whenever we camped by a fire, his stories would thrill and inspire. They grew every year when drinking his beer, making them higher and higher. He died in his sleep by the window, upstairs in the fancy bordello. His face had a grin, and spite of his sin, an eagle stood guard on his pillow. So now I'm like him to my children, beginning when they're in their playpen, and as they grow older, the stories get bolder. I spin them again and again.
Great read, Tom. I appreciate you doing that. And I'm sorry, Gerald E. Green. I just seen that he did have an audio for us. I apologize. We didn't get that one played and loaded. But if you are out there and it's possible, give his audio a play. I'm certainly going to listen to it before I leave a written comment on it. And I really appreciated this one. Another one that is very nostalgic, and I love to hear stories from Grandpa. That's definitely kind of a common theme. And it was kind of part of the prompt I also wrote, because it just seemed like Grandpa's, you know, and people from that certain generation and older generations just were so well with exaggeration, and then just the way that they would explain things. It's just something that came to mind. But Pam, why don't we start with you on comment?
Yeah, you know, grandfather, well, first of all, Gerald almost always makes a recording, just to let you know. So anytime you get a write from him, make sure to check, because it's usually right at the bottom. Yeah, you know, there seems to be that idea that, and it's so true, grandfathers have a gift for exaggeration, whether it's the fish story or the hunting story, you know, whether it's the joke. I mean, like, you know, my grandfather loved the exaggerated joke. One time I remember overhearing him talking with friends, you know, while playing cribbage and drinking beers, and he said, "I got laid last night and it wasn't even my birthday or Christmas." And, you know, it's just that kind of, you know, exaggeration, you know, of humor, of storytelling. I really like how the rhyme pattern in this that Gerald did, and, you know, how he puts in little tidbits of history. And, you know, the funny thing about this kind is like, it could actually be true. There could actually be, like, little tidbits of truth mixed in. And I find that oftentimes when people who exaggerate to tell a story, there oftentimes it's not a complete lie. Because, you know, if you think about it, we hate liars. But I don't know if hate's probably a strong word. We strongly dislike people that lie, but we're amused and enjoy the company of people who exaggerate. And so, you know, it's definitely, you've got to be able to pull that off, the keep some of the truth in there and put in the finesse of the exaggeration. And I think Gerald did an excellent job with this, and it's very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I thought that this was a great write. You know, he fought in the war under Patton, got medals for making an end run. He captured a corps and shortened the war with only a tank and a machine gun. You know, there is just some incredible stories out there of war, and you know, and it's just interesting to hear about somebody that was under Patton. He was such a kind of a polarizing figure itself. And so, once again, like I said, what an incredible, you know, period of history. And this right really showcases and highlights it in a great story. Faziana, what did you think about this one?
Well, before I comment, I am going to welcome our new caller. So welcome, whoever has just joined us. Who's with us?
Hey, this is Dan Deschino. Well, hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Great.
Glad you could make it. Did you get a chance to hear that last one?
I heard part of it, but I just read through it, and I really liked it. You know, there's a couple of things with it that I get. First of all, I heard your comment on Patton, and I did get that. My father actually fought in World War II, not under Patton. He was at the very end of it, but it was always really interesting hearing my father's stories. But what I get from this is just kind of both the exaggeration that, you know, grandfathers or fathers might do just to entertain kids, right? This is kind of almost sounds more like little kids that are there, and you're not necessarily at that age even trying to teach them. You're just trying to entertain them and tell a story, and also how crazy and magical a young kid will make it seem. He fought in the war under Patton, gold medals for making Enteron, captured Corps, short in the war with only a tank and machine gun. So, you know, it's sometimes how somebody might tell them to entertain somebody, and sometimes it's how a child might hear it as this kind of magical thing that they've never heard, that's new to them. So I liked it. I liked this a lot. I liked the rhyme scheme of it, and the whole idea of it and the way the picture went through. So it was very beautiful. It brought me back
to
thinking about hearing stories when I was a kid.
Yeah, for sure. Great comment, Daniel. And Faziano, why don't we finish with you? And then, I'm sorry, we still have Tom also, don't we?
Yeah.
Tom comment on this one. No, I'm losing it tonight. Faziano, why don't you leave a comment first?
Okay. I love this emphasis on oral history that we're getting in this. So many of the poems tonight talk about people who are telling stories, and that is really when we exaggerate the most, I think, when stories are told like this out loud around a campfire, and there is that kind of passing on of stories from generation to generation again in this poem that I think is wonderful. I like that his stories grew every year. And that I emphasize when drinking beer, because it's true. You know, sometimes if you're drinking, your stories get even more exaggerated, and making them higher and higher. Again, sorry, I'm referencing my nephew a lot recently, just because I've been spending time with him. And when he was trying to explain to me how big something was, he jumped up on his bed and raised his hands as high as he could, and he was like, "This big." And then so it was just like, it wasn't enough to just like spread your arms. You had to jump on top of the bed and then spread it out. Even though he was showing like how wide something was, it just, he had to be tall to do it. And I just picture this man drinking around the fire, like standing up on a log or something and like making himself as big as possible when telling the story, and his story being more and more exaggerated as he kind of had that stance of like, being the biggest self, even though it's not necessarily about something being big. There's something about when people are telling a big story, their gestures change. I like that his face had a grin in spite of his sin. It's such a, like, it's rare that you have, like, a nice moment of someone dying, but I actually, like, liked the image here of that. And the eagle standing guard on his pillow, it's something just really special about that. I like, especially, my favorite part is the end where the narrator, Gerald, is the one who is now telling the stories, and how it starts when they're very young in their playpen, But as they grow older, the stories get bolder. So more of the details that you can't really tell the little ones comes out, and then you can spin them bigger and bigger. And as you get the more mature version of it, it might get even more exaggerated. I think that's really fun that he's passing it on to the next generation and that he's recognizing that the story kind of evolves depending on the audience. It was nicely done.
Great comment, Afaziana. And Tom, why don't you finish this off and with the last comment?
Okay, I just delighted in this. I mean, I had my father's father who could tell you the best Shaggy Dog stories you ever heard and do it with a totally straight face. And my father added to his stories with the tales of like growing up during the Depression and the hard times it was. There wasn't that much focus on the war, even though my one grandfather told me about how he learned to play really nasty gin rummy while riding on the ferries back and forth from England to France, carrying over supplies. And I have my own. My son has never tells your stories, especially when you're playing with exaggerations, to somebody who's really smart as a child, because they remember every word. And my son at 28 now can still look at me and go, Dad, don't you remember when you told me about, and then tell me the entire story. And I'm like, God, how did you do that? I don't even remember telling that story. And he captures all that so beautifully in this, both with the reference to the grandfather, but also with his own little fanciness here at the end. His face had a grin in spite of his sin, and an eagle stood guard on his pillow. Really? And so he's already off and carrying on the heritage, as he says, about his children, and beginning when they're in their playpen. As they grow older, the stories get bolder as I spin them again and again. What more is there to say?
Great comment,
sometimes
Tom.
Sometimes better than a great tale.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. Great comment, Tom. And Daniel, it looks like Afaziana is calling your shot next. Glad you could join us, and give that a read whenever you're ready.
Sure. Let me get it here. Oh, yeah, The Bell. Let's read this one. So it's called The Bell. From my protective shelter, I venture onto the streets to walk the night before my ritualistic time travel into tomorrow. Peaceful seems tonight as the air is still, almost frozen in place as a cloudless sky highlights the stars. I walk as silence accentuates the world with each step. No cars do I see, nor even hear in the distance. No noise at all except the soft whisper of my own footsteps. No movement at all do I see. No shadows and highlighted windows. No swinging of tree limbs. No hum of the world in the distance. Only the painted landscape of what lies before me. Until the bell spoke. Like a ship calling for help far out to sea, I hear the ringing of metal as I walk. Through this frozen world I find myself in. I stop to listen. The bell continues, continuing on my path, and the bell joins my quest. I feel alone. I test the call of my ghostly siren, and it only rings with my forward motion, accompanied now by the clanging of my heart, trying to escape my chest. Why is it calling me? I must find the answer. I follow the sound through empty streets, for how long I do not know. I only know the sound of the bell as I chase it with manic obsession through parking lots, in private yards, down back roads, in lonely parks, until at the top of a hill on a forgotten street, I find myself at the edge of a field, unlighted by the modern world. Blocked by fear, I stop, yet the bell sings on. Its tone now deep, deeper than any bell should be. Its rhythm erratic, its resonance chilling. I enter ever forward, step by heavy step, until I'm surrounded by darkness. I stop on what seems to be the peak of a small hill, and the bell thunders a mighty blast that trembles the ground, and then silence, until a gentle wind on the grass appears, carrying the rhythm of a lone cricket somewhere within my reach, to be answered by a pair of coyotes far ahead, then accompanied by the call of a train farther off still. Sounds everywhere begin to awaken. I sit on the wind-softened grass and submit to the symphony of a world alive. And alive the world does sing, and I listen until the sunrise illuminates my surroundings. and I hear far behind me my guiding bell showing me the way home. End poem.
Great read, Daniel. Fantastic, right? Why don't we start with you, Aphasia, on the comments?
Okay. There was this one part where the bell was deep, deeper than any bell should be, and its rhythm erratic, its resonance chilling. Something about the erratic rhythm there made me think of, like, when your heart is beating in your ears and it's all crazy. Okay, I don't know, maybe that doesn't happen to most people, but that happens to me. I was thinking, like, the bell was, like, kind of giving that sense of, like, things are out of rhythm, and there's something really spooky about that feeling. That the sound is chilling is good, because it creates that atmosphere, and the bell thunders, like, it's erratic and it's deep, and then it thunders. It changes the tone throughout the thing, and I really like the way that I can imagine the sound and how the different bell tolls can have an impact on the person who's listening to it, and that it trembles the ground. I mean, that's huge. The lone cricket is such a delicate description of it there. The gentle wind on the grass appears, carrying the rhythm of a lone cricket. So after all that thunderous, loud stuff, tiny little bug having the forefront, and then the world coming alive with the sounds, this just feels like a symphony of noise that you've managed to do in writing, and I think that's wonderful.
Thank you. What an amazing
great comment, Aphasiana. And we got a lot of static going on. If everybody could mute while they're not commenting, that would be fantastic, so we can make sure and hear everybody. Faziano, was a great comment. Tom, why don't we go to you next?
I had just muted.
Sorry about that. Everybody but Tom mute.
I delighted in this, Dan, because I've been reading a great book about chaos theory, and this reminds me, in a sense, of that, the sense of, you know, we get caught up in a sound, we get caught up in trying to make things normal that aren't normal, to give reason where there is no reason, to make things follow rules when there really are no rules to follow. And the crazy chase through it is almost like a scientist trying to make things fit the bell curve when they don't. And yet, when you get to that last ending, that last after the silence, until a wind on the grass appears, carrying the rhythm of a lone cricket somewhere within my reach. One of the things that they say about chaos theory is that, in a sense, things that fit into the bell curve, when you get into all the real chaos of things as the changes start happening too fast, you start discovering all sorts of little bell curves, or whatever the x-axis by y-axis graph that you were creating, it starts showing up within the chaos, but like in little tiny images, little tiny sub-universes. And it's almost as if you had found your own space where all of a sudden, in stopping, the wonder, the magnificence all came together, and you suddenly could hear things with a clarity like you'd never heard before. And then that very ending, my guiding bell showing me the way home, just rings so perfectly true.
Yeah, great comment, Tom. I really kind of read this and thought of a metaphor, you know, and a lot of times it could be maybe a metaphor for love. Sometimes it could be a metaphor for like a certain calling, something that you were meant to do. You know, and it's like, what's driving us, or what are we? So a lot of times it's like we're searching for something that we have no idea really what it is. We just hear it. We just feel it. We just know, you know, because life could be extremely morbid if you're not searching for what the bell is, or what that noise is, or what's out there in the distance. And it's very easy for life to be morbid when, like I said, when the fact is that we have no idea what it is. And once you finally figure out what it is and get to that point and the illuminating of it and the understanding and reaching that new level of just fulfillment, you know, and finally reaching what you were looking for. This was an incredible write, Daniel, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it was very poetic throughout, and you read it wonderfully, and I really enjoyed it, so well done.
Amazing comments. Thank you very much.
Let's go. No problem. Let's go with Pam. What did you think about this?
Oh, I really enjoyed this. I was looking at your AN and how it turned out that the clanging ended up being a rope on a flagpole blowing in the wind, but my imagination took over, and this is what I wrote. And I think it's such a, you know, an important part of the whole tale is, you know, the idea that especially noise, like if you see something with your eyes, you're more less likely to have to exaggerate in the moment. But when you're taking a walk, and especially in the dark, and especially if, you know, the imagination just takes over with every little sound you hear. You know, as someone who lives kind of, you know, like in a small town where there's a lot of woods, and, there's certain areas, like even though I technically live in town, there are certain areas where it's very dense woods, and you look in there at nighttime and you just imagine what's behind every tree. Or like I used to live near a big DNR building that kept all the trucks all the stuff for taking care of the city streets and, you know, snow plows and that. And, you know, you walk by those at that garage at nighttime and your imagination just starts sparking. And I like how you made this all about, it was all just a simple noise that was easily explained once it was in view. But because the imagination took over when it wasn't in view, it became this kind of grand tale of possibilities. And so just an excellent write all the way through, wonderful use of imagery and sound, and very well done.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, actually. That's what happened. I took a walk like I always do when I write, and there really wasn't any – where I was, there wasn't any wind, and nothing was going on. It seemed like the whole world was gone. And then I was hearing this noise. I'm like, what is that? I had to find it. And because I was concentrating on the noise, you know, I heard all these other things like a cricket and coyotes and trains and that kind of thing. And then I just exaggerated it like the prompt was. But it is true that, you know, when you're listening like that, you start hearing, you know, things that maybe you wouldn't have heard of before. So some of it was true, but yes, all those other parts were exaggerated. That wasn't a bell.
Yeah.
It was a boring flagpole.
Well, like I said, I thought it was a fantastic write and way to bring life to a boring flagpole. So very well done, Daniel. And
thank you.
Next up, we have Afasiana. So Afasiana, whenever you're ready, why don't you give that a read?
Okay, so this is not really an exaggerated story. It's an exaggerated description of myself when I'm moody. So weird. Okay. Poison
Perfect.
For your pancakes.
That may be a great story in and of itself.
Poison for your pancakes. On a scale of squishing a spider out of spite to slaying a unicorn to harvest its horn to stab someone, how irritable are you today? I can be maple syrup for weeks. So sweet, I stick in your mind. But a startling noise will flip an invisible switch. Suddenly, I'm cayenne in your eye. Sober, I'm rainbow bright meets strawberry shortcake on Molly. Until, Lightning turns me inside out and paints me the blue of sadness, Eeyore amplified by the crash of broken pride. Like an avocado, you need to try me at exactly the right moment, because I go from my most vibrant to rotten in literally a flash. I never see it coming until it punches me in the face. I should wear earrings with traffic lights made of mood gems. Emeralds shower me with affection and let me take care of you. Golden, request you yield to my whimsical whims. Crimson foreshadows the splatter of crossing me. Slow, Loris, my big baby eyes project innocence. But sorry to say I'm toxic when afraid. And anxiety is the glue between myself and Paul.
Fantastic, Rita Faziana. I really enjoyed this, and you know, this is a different kind of a style of write than what we're used to seeing out of you. A lot of times yours are very rhyming and flow, and it just seemed like this one was so much, almost like a stream of consciousness, like kind of write about yourself, because it was just, or you know, it was just so kind of abstract. I just really enjoyed it. You know, from sober, I'm a rainbow bright meets strawberry shortcake on Molly until lightning turns me inside out and paints me a blue of sadness, Eeyore amplified by the crash of broken pride. I mean, that's an incredible stanza, and it's kind of mind blowing as far as just the right. I think it's almost just like an acid trip or something itself. And poison for your pancakes. I mean, it's a great title all the way through. I really love this Rite of Faziana. Tom, what did you think about this one?
Oh, it to me, it sounds just like I would imagine a Faziana sounding. It's full of whimsy and magic, wonder and delight. The only thing that could, in a sense, I found my own head crack commenting was, I can be maple syrup for weeks, so sweet, I stick in your mind. All I could think of was Miss Debbie, which is the most disgustingly overly sugary thing I could think of. But I love the, suddenly I'm cayenne in your eye, having gotten red pepper and other things like that in my eyes. The pain is not something worth talking about, because it would just be a scream that went down the whole page. but these flip-flopping comparisons between utterly delightful and utterly horrid are just done with a great sense of joyous whimsy and exaggeration. Like, let me see just how crazy I can be and tell you exactly how it all is. And I don't know about anxiety being glue. I suffered from a high anxiety disorder most of my life, and it seems to be the most destructive thing I can ever think of in my life. But other than that, I love every little bit of this.
Thank you.
Great, right? I mean, great comment, Tom. And let's go, Dan. What did you think about this?
Well, slaying a unicorn to harvest its horn to stab someone might be one of the greatest lines I've ever read, I think. Next to Rainbow Bright meets Strawberry Shortcake on Molly. So there you go right there. Those two lines might be some of my favorites. Those both should be contests on their own. But they were just, I read them like six times, so I'm on my own. I really love those. And I liked every single line I read. This is actually a pretty amazing poem with just everything that you say, the way you describe everything. And I really like the anxiety is the glue between my cells. You know, it is hard. You know, I agree with Tom. Anxiety, you know, I have horrible anxiety a lot, and it can rip you apart, but then it can also be what actually holds you together. You know, it can be what actually drives you almost. Like, you almost miss it sometimes if you get anxious so much. So it can be, you know, what's the energy that you have, right? Because the opposite of the anxiety is depression, basically. So it's almost the fire that keeps you going sometimes. I mean, I could go on for about every single line on here, but you know, like an avocado, you need to try me at the exact right moment, because I go from most vibrant to rotten in a flash. I never see it coming till it punches me in the face, which is an amazing stanza just on its own that, you know, you don't see sometimes these, you know, your own emotions till it hits you, and you're the one that can feel it the most sometimes out of anybody. So I agree with the comments that it's very whimsical and fun, and it seems to encompass you, that you know, the deepness that this has, but also, again, the fun part of it as well too. So I could totally see the gold just for those two lines I mentioned again. Two of my favorite lines I've read. They both made me laugh, and they both made me think.
Thank you.
So
great anyway. Comment, Daniel. And Pam, why don't you have last comment on this one?
Did you say my name, Dexter?
Yeah, sorry. I thought the mute monster ate you. Yeah, Pam, if
yeah,
you would
no,
leave last comment on this
quite,
one.
Didn't quite catch you. Yeah, I really like this. It has great, dark, twisted humor. I like how it's all about you, and it has that brutal honesty that is such a part of you, but it's an exaggerated version. You know, I really did like also that the line of out of spite slaying a unicorn to harvest its horn to stab someone. I have to admit, I don't know who Molly is, but totally know who Rainbow Bright and Strawberry Shortcake is, so that was clever, too. And Eeyore amplified by the crash of broken pride. There's really a great lot of cultural and childhood-like references here that I really appreciated. And Slow Lore's My Big Baby Eyes project innocence, but sorry to say I'm toxic when afraid. Anxiety is the glue between my cells. And it's such a nice balance mentions of a serious part of the topic of anxiety, but also that bit of humor. And, of course, the avocado, because, damn, you turn your back on an avocado and it's gone rotten. So that absolutely was another brilliant, just spot-on metaphor right there. So very cool.
Great comment,
Pam. Thank you. Molly is a drug. Not a person.
Yeah.
yeah.
And and Slow Loris is an animal who really does have like cute big eyes and seems all innocent, but is poison, venomous. So that's why.
Well, thanks for the clarification, Faziana. Yeah. Pam got just educated on a new drug that she. You're dying to try. No, I'm just kidding.
It just goes to show. One person's obvious is another person's mystery.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is, no, I'm not saying do it. I'm not promoting drugs. People tend to think that I'm high, but I'm not. I'm just crazy. I'm like, no. That's why it says sober.
I mean, it's admirable.
Major anxiety.
Yeah, just because you're happy and laughing doesn't mean you're high, right? You're just happy.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
What mommy can't buy.
Still, Strawberry Shortcake on Molly would be a very interesting sight, I have to say.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'd watch that cartoon.
That'd be like watching My Kitty on Molly.
Dexter.
Especially Strawberry Shortcake on Molly stabbing somebody with a unicorn horn. That's what I want to say.
Right? That's
yeah.
Me.
Anyway. That sounds like a fantastic time.
Exactly.
But this is one I wrote a while back. This is Who Invited the Sun? By Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey. Knock at the door, shut the music off. Hotel short straw technician. My mom opens buzz kills pearly gates. Begin reasoning with a tropical Nazi munchkin, or so it seemed. We've been kicked out of nicer places than this, my dad yells from the couch. Years later, that statement leaves me perplexed. Relief sets in, like checking the fast food bag and your order is right. And down the hall, and down the hall the s'more-mouthed gnome leaves. So we decided the only correct plan of attack is what any good standing American would do, break into the pool. We hit the corner laughing as if we were cartoon villains, past the hotel desk like Pee-wee dancing atop the bar. Wet floor means wet floor, but it's 3 a.m. French, until my dad slips, then in English says, son of a, but never spills his beer. So in any language, that's a victory. Lucky us, someone is swimming. We stay a bit. After that, 5 a.m. Denny's, out with my parents, a night of joy, etched in my memory eternal. End poem.
This is really a fun excerpt. I like my mom opens Buzzkill Pearly Gates. That's so great. There's something about Denny's where I feel like I've only ever been there after a crazy night. I don't know what, like, it's Denny's is that place you go when everything has gone crazy. I liked that, and so in any language, that's a victory. Not spilling his beer when he falls down. Oh, that's classic. I feel like our dads would get along. I also enjoyed the s'more mouth gnomes. That's, oh, it's so vivid. Are you sure that this wasn't strawberry shortcake going crazy too?
No, it wasn't that. It was just. It wasn't the strawberry shortcake Molly night or nothing like that. That was just a different night.
That sounds really fun. Pam, would you like to comment?
Oh my goodness, this is great all the way through. There's nothing better than a well-told drunk tale of family just having fun and bonding together. I really like. We've been kicked out of nicer places than this, my dad yells from the couch. And, of course, where you say, we hit the corner laughing as if we were cartoon villain past the hotel desk, like Pee-wee dancing on top of a bar. And the reference to, but never spill his beer. So in any language, that's a victory. This just has great, relatable humor all the way through, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
I do love the cartoon villain thing, too. There's something about when you're laughing that hard that you can't stop, and it's like you don't even necessarily remember why you started laughing. You start laughing at the sound of your own laughing, at the sound of everyone else laughing, and you're laughing at each other laughing, and it never ends.
Well, we were trying to be quiet, too, so it turned out to going like, you know what I mean? So, anyway.
I'm incapable of quiet laughing. Like, I have no voice right now because of my cold, and it still can't be quiet. Daniel, what did you think?
The worst thing to me is when you're all laughing and you're finally just getting it together to stop, and somebody walks out and says, what's so funny? And in the process of trying to tell them, you all fall back into laughing so hard you can't move.
That's right. Usually it's contagious like that, so.
Yeah, no. I listened to this and suddenly realized that things that I thought were totally normal in my family, other people might have seen as being insane. You have to understand, my father was a lieutenant commander in the Navy, and very lieutenant commander-like, you know, as that goes, stiff and sharp orders, and a Boy Scout, you know, a scoutmaster, and great in the woods and wilderness. But my parents were closet beatniks, and so they had artsy-fartsy friends, and insanity was breakfast, dinner, and any other time when it could take place. And that's what this reminds me of so greatly. I love it. The description of we hit the corner laughing as if we were cartoon villains past the hotel desk, like Pee Wee Herman dancing on top of the bar. That's just a priceless image, because when you get caught up in the moment, you forget that other people might not look at you as being acceptable, normal, or even belonging where you are. But as long as you can get away with it, it's a great and wonderful laugh. When I was in college,
I don't know if I've ever been acceptable or normal, so I've never aimed.
Oh, well, you know, it was like, you know, when we got done playing poker, the best place to go was a Oriental place called Hung Far Lows, and I loved it just because of the name. I have never forgotten Hung Far Lows. It was the only place in Portland, Oregon, open at 3 in the morning.
Well, then, like I said, it's a hot spot.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was a bar in London called Filthy McNasty's, but that was actually filthy and nasty, so.
And did you ever notice that you sat in those places early in the morning looking at all the other weirdos who were in the same place looking at all the other weirdos, and you suddenly realized you were probably one of them?
Oh, I've always been one of them. I embrace that.
I've known I was one of them, so.
Daniel, what did you think of the poem?
Yeah, you know, it was, I agree with it, what everybody said. I there's no way I can top all that except Tropical Nazi Munchkin, your mother describing you as that, it made me laugh pretty hard, too. Like, you just, the whole thing to me either was like a really crazy sitcom or a cartoon. I could just see it. I was actually hearing like all the little cartoon noises and music as I was reading this and thinking of you guys kind of running around. So I'm just gonna agree with everybody because you guys took it all the words all out of me. This is a lot of fun and just a ton of great little things. And that's. I agree with the Faziana, too. My mom opens the Buzzkill Pearly Gates, made me laugh out loud as well, too. But you couldn't hear because I was on mute, like I was told. I do what I'm told. So this is a lot of fun. This is beautiful. I loved it. But again, this is like a written cartoon. That's all I could see was just you guys as these little devils running around and hearing the cartoon noises. So loved it.
Yeah,
you got to write about your cousin's wedding next so we could see. I can just imagine what that was like.
Yeah, I mean, it was a blast. It was one of the best nights. But yeah, that hotel, you know, the hotel person, I just heard my mom open the door and it just sounded like, you know, I couldn't really hear them and it sounded like they were shrinking as they walked down the hall. So it was a wild night. We had a blast. So thank you. Thank you for all the comments.
It was a great poem.
Okay, and next here we have, we're going to read one by Kel, Pam, if I could get you to read this one.
Absolutely, I'll be happy to. All right, this is Pool of Bubbles by Kel Smiles, and it goes like this. Young lady living hater corner from me, I freely admit she's my granddaughter, my youngest at 13, ginger, blue-eyed, tall, buxom, too soon in my eyes. Story told to me that day, but really I was there when her sister came along and said, Mom, she's overflowing the pool with suds. She was told not to. You know how siblings are. They enjoy the drama of tattling on each other. In this case, it was probably a good idea. Mom, Dad, and I went outside to take a look. OMG, Bug, what did you do? We are astonished at the bubbly sight. Pool overflowing yard was covered, coated in sodding suds, a bubbling mess with nowhere to step outside. Bug, we told you no soap. Their dog came out slipping, sliding into the soap-bubbled yard, soon to be lost. Bug, find the dog. She's lost in the sud. Bella, a German Shepherd breed, trotted out, covered in a soapy coat. Mom, Dad, I tried to use the hose to rinse it out, but bubbles kept rising to the top. It wasn't my fault, not at all. Besides, I only used a little bit on the sides inside the pool's bottom brush to clean. You asked me to. Without a doubt, it's your fault, for you were told not to use soap. Now we have bubble fence to fence, front to back. It will take forever to clean it up. Turning, we went back inside in hopes that the bubbles would soon subside. End poem.
Great read, Pam, and fantastic write, Kel. Too bad you couldn't join us this evening, but we always appreciate you submitting writes. Faziano, why don't you start us with comments on this?
You know what, can you give me a minute? Because I got distracted.
Yeah, no problem.
And it looks like we just lost Daniel. So I'm sorry, Dan. I had muted everyone for a second, so I hope you didn't get offended and when I did that, because it wasn't you specifically. I was trying to work out some technical difficulties. So if you're listening, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, we were getting some feedback, so I apologize, Daniel. Why don't we start with Tom on the comments?
This has a certain wonderful joy in it. Because it's such an incredible, god-awful mess. I used to be a swimming pool mechanic when I was in college. This may be an exaggeration, but not too far from the truth, given some things that I've been called in to clean up. I can see the dog running through it and getting covered in all the soap, and somebody thinking that you should use it to get rid of the scum line around the pool. Oh, this is just rich, rich, rich. And the final last line is the totally appropriate response. God, I don't know what else you could do. Great, great, great story.
Great comment, Tom. And why don't we go to Pam? What did you think about this one?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is fun. And knowing, how kids oftentimes take things very literally or don't pay attention to every detail. Like, I could easily hear a kid saying, you need to clean the pool, but totally missing that they weren't supposed to use any soap. And then trying to solve the problem on their own. This is just such great humor all the way through. I really enjoyed how she brought to us the imagery of the dog running through the bubbles and then the whole family just going back inside and hoping the bubbles would subside. So excellent, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Faziana, can we come back to you now?
Yes. This creates such a fun visual of the bubbles overflowing. I like that it points out, the sibling drama of tattling, but then sometimes it's a good idea, too, because you got to find it. It's cute how they use, the nickname, Bug. We told you no soap. Bug. Find the dog. And there's the exclamation marks here, like we were talking about earlier, when you're exaggerating, you got to have exclamation marks. There's a lot of them in here. This is really cute. It's a fun story, and I wonder how much of it is true with all the bubbles and stuff. It could be quite the scene with a whole pool filling up. It would be fun. Thanks for sharing, Cal.
Fancy. Yeah, great comment, Faziano. This is Living Cater Corner from me. I freely admit she's my granddaughter, a youngest at 13, ginger, blue-eyed, tall. This is just a fantastic write, and it's just a very warm and tender write. Mom, Dad, and I went outside to take a look. Oh, my God, Bug, what did you do? It's just the up-and-down roller coaster. It had all of the great build up and things like that a great story should have. I just really enjoyed this write by Kel. I thought it was very well done. Next here, did everybody comment on that one? I think
mm-hmm.
they didn't.
Yeah.
We did. I'm sorry, Faziana, you're running the show here too. So I'm going to go next here to, we're going to go to Stephen Wellman here next. And, Tom, if I could get you to read this next one, that would be great.
Sure.
So hold on 1 second. And there we go. So Stephen Wellman.
All right. The Walk by Stephen T. Wellman. Papa, let's take a walk. My little man, my 5-year-old grandson, repeatedly asks. I say to him, Let's go. We'll walk the gravel path along the woods behind the house. We walk and we talk. I can see his little mind wandering, full of excitement and questions. Will we see any deer, Papa? Will we find another gold stone? Are those weeds or flowers, Papa? Can we collect some more stones, Papa? As he puts his little hand in mine, I hold on tight. My adult mind begins wandering full of thoughts and prayers. I never want this moment to end. Please know, Papa is always with you, my little man. He is growing way too fast. Lord, I can thank you for this time we have together. Every child is a gift. Every grandchild a blessing. I know there will be a time when I must let go of his little hand. But you hold it, Lord. Watch over him. Always keep him under your wing. Papa, Papa, my little man cried. Yeah, buddy, what's up? Can we go now, Papa? The mosquitoes are biting. Please, don't let them carry me away, Papa. I won't, buddy, I won't. I got you, my little man. Papa's got you. I always will. End poem.
Well, that was very sweet. I love the connection that he has with the grandson here and that wonderful curiosity and excitement that the grandson has. I think 5 years old is like my favorite age because they're still excited about absolutely everything, but they're old enough that they can communicate it. It's so fun. And I like that there's the questions because at that age it's all questions. I thought that was so well done. I also really like that he's scared the mosquitoes are going to carry him away. And I love that he spells mosquitoes wrong because I'm pretty sure this is on purpose. Most mosquitoes, like that would be like what the little boy says, most mosquitoes are biting. I think that's a really cute mistake that the kid made. And it's really cute when they say things wrong like that sometimes. I mean, especially if it's something that it's how they interpret it. So most mosquitoes, it's like they're the most scary or there's the most of them. And then for them to be carrying him away, I think that's the most exaggerated part of this story is the idea that the little boy has that this might happen because there's a swarm of them. This was very sweet, and I love that family feel that we're getting in so many of the poems tonight. And Dexter, what did you think?
Yeah, this was just a very loving, just caring, tender write. I really enjoyed this by Stephen, and this is a little bit different even. You know, we're getting some different styles out of people tonight, and, you know, Stephen usually is a lot of, you know, I don't know if it's just our show, but it seems like so many of the ones that the Stephen writes are very personal and have, you know, pieces of him throughout. But this just is, and it's a lot of times from a little bit of a darker lens. But this is just such an endearing write and a little bit more of his tender side. And I like how he just kind of, you know, you have a different, you know, you have an understanding and a perspective as an adult in this whole situation. This is all new to this young grandson, then you're walking along this path. But the understanding of time is in the wisdom of the elder in this one, and Stephen, and he understands that, you know, how much to enjoy living here in the present. And he kind of just goes off into his mind here too a little bit about just hoping that this kid is okay, you know, is going to be okay, you know, holding on to his hand. And just, it's just a very loving write. This is one of my favorite ones I've read by Stephen. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
I agree. Pam, what did you think?
I really like one. I like how it has all the questions from the little one. I like how it captures the personality of that age group with not only the questions, but as you pointed out, the most mosquitoes. I mean, just wonderful humor. And I've also noticed, too, that Stephen writes a lot of personal, like slightly darker writes than this one. But you know what I think? I think oftentimes, and I don't really know Stephen, but, you know, when people go through difficult times in their life and they express it through most of their poetry and they find somebody, somebody comes into their life like a child or a grandchild, someone they're to be the protector of, I think that comes through, especially in his ending lines where he says, "I won't, buddy, I won't. I got you, my little man. Papa's got you. I always will." You know, there's some great humor in this write, but I also think there's that kind of a tone of a serious thought on how once we have children, once we have grandchildren, we become the mama bears, we become the papa bears, or at least many of us do. And it's all they oftentimes ask of us is those little things like squish the mosquito, chop the head off the wasp, you know, like aunties do. And, you know, it's just a wonderful, heartfelt write all the way through and very well done.
I agree. And, Tom, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I can just see a little kid looking up at me and going, "I know you can take care of anything that comes, and you, when I'm with you, everything's going to be fun." Yeah, you know. And I remember when I had my one and only son, my best friend looked at me and said, "Watch close. They grow up before you know it." And he was so right. And this captures all of that. The fear, the happiness, the absolute joy, both on the part of the kid and on your own part, because, you know, if you weren't loving it, it wouldn't be happening. Catches it right to the T. Great job.
Thank you, Tom. Dexter, where are we headed next?
If you could give this one a read, Faziana, this is by Enos Richard.
Okay. Fisherman's Tale by Enos Richard. Went out fishing the other day, nonstop work, took time to play. Dumped my speedboat in the lake, planned to fish and make a wake. I brought my buddy, Little Rock. He smashed my boat into the dock. We patched it up without delay, poured some beers and sped away. Boulder duty was on Little Rock. He knew to look for giant rocks, but all he did was talk and talk. I hit a boulder, starboard side. We flew in the air like a giant wind chime. We almost flipped the boat one time, but then we crash landing right side up. Little Rock lost half the beer in his cup. When we started fishing, it was getting late. Space Cake Little Rock forgot to buy bait. We used fake bait, and I hooked a fish. Finally, the fish gods granted my wish. At first, I thought I snagged a snag, until it ran and pulled my drag. Boy, that monster could pull and run. My arms got sore from the son of a gun. A record lunker, as strong as a horse. Little Rock forgot the net, of course. A monstrous beast, both fat and husky. Finally, I could see the oversized muskie. As I pulled and fought and reeled it near, Little Rock sat and drank all of my beer. Several hours later, I got the fish to float, but it was far too big to fit inside my boat. End quote. Tom, would you like to start the comments?
Total fish story. I understand the having the friend who is complete catastrophe, and is long for the ride and having a great time, but just screws everything to the wall. I've had a friend like that. It takes you years to recover. And he describes him so well. And then, but the fishing tale, he does it perfectly, right down to his description of Little Rock, drinking all his beer, forgetting the net. But that final verse, as I pulled and fought and reeled it near, several hours later, I got the fish to float, but it was far too big to fit inside my boat. Now, that's better than you should have seen the one that got away. great fish story. Great fish story.
Yes. Dex, what did you think?
I agree. It was a great fish story and very entertaining all the way through, you know, nonstop work, you know, took time to play. You know, sometimes it's all of the things that don't go right that are the memorable things. And sometimes in those moments, you're like, God, you know, God damn it, you know, and all of this kinds of things. You know, you get out there and the motor doesn't start and all of this. But when you kind of look back, you know, it didn't happen on here. But, you know, those things kind of happen sometimes when you're out fishing. And, you know, this, you know, you just get caught on this. And here he spilt the beer. And all of this, you know, we used fake bait and I hooked a fish finally. You know, it's just all of the things that, you know, kind of in the moment you're going, God, you know, this is a nightmare and things. But when it's all said and done, it's you look back and you can write a entertaining story about it. And that was, and you realize that was kind of part of the fun of the whole adventure. So I thought that this was a very entertaining write and very well done.
I agree. Pam, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I was very entertained by this also. I like how it was about everything that went wrong and about that ditzy friend and how it was all, you know, exaggerated. And wonderful rhyme and flow and just really one of those writes that just brings a smile and a laugh. So very well done.
Agreed. Dex, do we have another one?
Yeah, we're going to go to Robbie's. We are a little bit short, maybe. I know we got one extra one by you, Faziana. Thomas, if while I'm reading this, if you would like to grab another one that you think would kind of maybe fit here this evening that's maybe a little bit shorter, you can go ahead and do that also.
I'm fine with that.
We have. Or if you don't think, maybe Pam would like to grab a shorter one or something like that, but we might need one more. So.
Yeah. I doubt you will. I mean, but, you know.
Well, we're getting close, but anyway, so we have here.
It's not that long.
A oh, night. Yeah, here we go. This one.
By Robbie's poetry. A night, remembrance forsworn of love bloomed in its fullest array as rose petal stems come erect, remembering of the first time of love's blossom between us, now enhancing the flowering of present love's. I remember it so well, like the night just passed, the way your lips grazed against mine, an excited and tentative taste. Your love, a sample of love's wine so divine, making the note of my love's song swoon. Sharps and flats slipped and flowed into my love song that night, accenting the chorus of sensuality that till then had grown to feel rather familiar, too much the same. I willingly went far past saying with you in the night just past as your breast heaved against my chest, syncopation and synchronicity growing, two heartbeats growing to beating as one. I lost my breath as your mouth. Wait a second. I lost my place. Oh, there it is. I lost my breath as your mouth pressed hold against mine, took in every single storm, every single atom of air within my lungs. I gave it all to you in one moment before we even began. Yet somehow I had more than enough to continue with you last night. You remember it well, too, don't you? The way your hands clasped with mine, me giving up my defenses to be wholly enveloped by you. I gave, and yet gave out the energy of a creature fierce with love's fires, my body in flames with desire as you tore all my inhibitions away. bringing out all my desire. You made me weak in resistance, yet so strong in desiring you, and I loved you for it, body and soul, putting my mind and body in a juxtaposition of weakness and strength, my body grown hard with hot excitement, yet soft with love's acclaim. I exclaim to you, now that I will remember it always, the way you brought out that exquisite contradiction, the hard and soft, the weak yet strong, resisting yet yielding. What power there is in that, to embrace the paradox, to lose one's breath to it, to lose one's very soul in it. As breast heaves against chest, as pelvic bone meets pelvic bone, and we dance the night away, with two bodies jousting, playing the game that only lovers play. End poem.
Great read. And quite the sensual, right, Robbie? He did say, prepare yourself for sauciness, he says, and indeed. I really liked the word choices here when he said syncopation and synchronicity. I gotta admit, I looked up syncopation to make sure I understood it. It's a musical term meaning a variety of rhythms played together to make a piece of music. And I think that works really nicely as a metaphor here. I liked all the contrasts in here, the juxtaposition of weakness and strength, the exquisite contradiction. It, you know, that's something that is really strong when you're talking about sensuality, when you're talking about love. You know, it's a mix of things, and that is what makes it so great. I think that this was very creatively written and tasteful, and I think, Robbie, you need to enter some of Victoria's Black Lace Diary contests. Take a look for Victoria Frost. I think you'd do well in her contests. Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, or even like some Art of Seduction contests or shows would be nice. I think he did a wonderful job of, making a sensual write. It does make me think of this meme I saw with a picture of a credit card. Proof that 4.5 inches can get a woman excited. And I only bring that up because it's
a great one.
But, I really do enjoy this. And what I like is that it's the passion shared and the physical connection and passion that comes as he says that it's two heartbeats growing to beating as one. I lost my breath as your mouth pressed whole against mine, took every single atom of air within my lungs. Definitely some very passionate lines, beautifully written and very well done.
Pardon me. Tom, would you like to comment?
Well, this verse stands out to me. I'll explain why in a second. Sharps and flats slipped and flowed into my love song that night, accenting the chorus of sensuality that till then had grown to feel rather familiar, too much the same. The way he plays the contrast and swings things back and forth, it just resonates with a sense of exaggeration to the point where I find myself wondering if he isn't pulling our legs slightly and having a great time. You made me weak in resistance, yet so strong in desiring you, and I loved you for it, body and soul. The way it is done constantly, just the whole thing, makes me feel like it's a, in a way, it's more parody than anything else, and done with a real exquisite sense of just how dry and wry his wit is in this, that I find it just a stunning bit of work.
I agree. Now, Dex, it looks like you're trying to get one more in, the one by Jamos, so we better get on that because we only have 5 minutes left.
Yep. I'm going to give this a read. This is by Jamos, Striking Silence. Built a wall, rode over it all. This is my call. Behold the welcome to my hall. To no time to stall, not moving is when you fall. Hurry past the ball and leave it lack have gulf. Never tame, the flow carries the flame, soundless in the name. As words carry the game, we're scorching out the lames. Watch out as it becomes insane, out of control as pen breaks the chain. Can't handle heat, the run with your shame. That's how rights handle the pit, don't bring the blame. This where words manage the feats and demolish falls on the plains. Best drop the pen before you feel the crits. Never an easy den, and barrages are like the rain. So don't bring the cabbage. Bring that cabbage if you don't burn the major savage. As your pauses easily become leverage, and your anger betrays you out of passage. But don't worry. Well, with stab comes message, assuring that all is secure. But the ledges. As I make you fall, breaking all the edges, and your rhyme becomes modern messes. That some call free writing, but poetry lessons. But that's all another talk, so hope you learned your lesson. That going against the cleanest only awakens the way of a felon. Maybe not one of the meanest, but in the world is still venom. That instinct fear like a myth of venom. So better walk away before verbs steal your tendons, leave you stuck in the fray, words that deliver held them. Yeah, this was a very interesting write. Great rhyme and flow throughout. This is more of a lyrical kind of rap, you know, and this is, you know, very well done. The a lot of power and a lot of strength throughout these lines. And obviously it's something that's very personal and something that somebody is breaking out. And, you know, I mean, breaking out of certain feelings that they're having and breaking out of maybe a certain past that they had lived. So glad that you posted this, Jamos. If you're new to the group, we do these shows. People usually submit poetry to certain prompts. I'm glad we had a little bit of time here at the end to get yours read, but feel free to make sure and look out for other prompts and other things that we have posted on here. We usually don't post poetry to the board, but it's usually in the threads, and that's how you get your poetry read. And so we'll kind of leave the comments here. Hopefully everybody will leave a written comment on this one. We just kind of ran out of time. I appreciate everybody that called in. I'm sure Faziana will say the same as well. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Pam. Thank you, Faziana. Thank you, Phil, for allowing us to do this as well. Thank you, everybody that wrote. This was a fun show. Thank you, Robbie, for holding down the board. You were here from start to finish. You know, and like I said, I'm just happy that people are continuing to write, people are continuing to enjoy the show. We're getting some new faces on here. Faziana has got a new contest here. She'll be posting here shortly for that, so make sure and stay tuned for that. Pam, you have a show coming up shortly. Would you like to say anything
what
it's about?
In a half hour, we have Break On Through, and we'll have writes from two different contests, A Bridge of Ice, and Schism. So I've just bumped up the topic board to the top, and so people can check that out and see if they have something that fits. And so that's what we got.
Yeah, that was great, Pam. Faziana, you got anything at the end? You got a show tomorrow?
I do have a show tomorrow, a part sinner, part saint, and the contest is Crossroads. So check out my contest, Crossroads. It's still open, and we'll see you tomorrow or at Pam's show shortly. Thank you, everyone.
Yep.
Good night.